Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back to the Drivers Meeting Podcast, episode 70. We are back, myself and Matthew Narvaez. We'll introduce him in a few. We got a lot of great stuff coming on the show. We're talking about Road America that just happened this weekend. We're leading into Atlanta. We got Mid-Ohio for the Truck Series. And we got a special, special guest, David Ruderman, on the podcast coming up soon. But first, we got to thank our great partners at Bet Online. They continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's Wimbledon Finals, Major League Baseball, the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL futures. Head to the website or use your mobile device today to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus in your first deposit. Just use our promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to get the bonus and get into the action. But online, it's where the game starts. So as I noted, Road America this past weekend, Tyler Reddick, first career win. Cheddar's wasn't on the car, but the first thing I always think of is free chicken tenders. I secured that yesterday, Matt. Got myself some free chicken tenders, tasted pretty good, hit the spot. But, you know, besides the point, everyone obviously was very excited. Tyler Reddick scored his first career win, and he did it none other by passing Chase Elliott, who was the road course king, won Road America the previous year. So, Matt, we'll bring you in here. First of all, how you doing, and how'd you enjoy Road America?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me back. I know it's been a couple of weeks. more than a little while. But yeah, no, I mean, I did. I enjoyed it a lot. Xfinity was really good. I really enjoyed the Xfinity race. The Cup race was okay, in my opinion. I mean, we can get into that a little bit later. I mean, there's a lot of grudges I had with the race a little bit, but that Elliott and Reddick battle really saved it. And then we got a new first-time winner out of it. So that was really cool. I think the Xfinity race and the Cup race, for the first time I can remember in a while, they really mirrored each other. You know what I mean? We had like the strong leader. Larson was like a little off on the day, but once he got out to a big lead, he can like maintain it. And his first couple laps were pretty slow compared to the 54, maybe even the 16 or the 07. But yeah, they really mirrored each other, where Larson was like Elliott and then Gibbs was like Reddick. So, you know, really impressive for Reddick to beat the road course king, as we call Chase Elliott, in the Cup Series. And then really impressive for Ty Gibbs to beat Kyle Larson. You know, when you're able to make a move on the Cup champion like that, and then, but really cleanly as well, like pressure him into a mistake, I think that speaks possibly more volumes than just passing him like straight up cleanly. He led him into a mistake. That means that Kyle Larson was thinking in his head that this kid, if I don't, you know, speed up here, he's going to make a move because he's fast, you know, and he knows how to win races, and especially on road courses. So, you know, Gibbs is someone obviously to look out in the future. He finally beat a Cup guy straight up. So that's kind of off the list here. When will he move to Cup? And then Reddick getting his first win, adding him into the playoffs, fifth new time winner this season in the Cup Series. So really, we could take a lot from the weekend, and really the young guys keep winning, right? Like, that's the main thing. The young guys just keep winning, and it's really impressive.
Yeah, exactly. And you noted on, you know, the grudges that you have with the Cup Series race. And this was something we kind of talked about during the weekend. It's something that myself and Tommy Joe talked about a long time ago with this, when the next gen cars were first coming along, was these road course races. Like, all right, these cars, you know, these new cars, they're meant to handle better on the road courses, but is that going to be a good or a bad thing? Obviously it's going to be good for the drivers. You know, they're going to have a better handling car on road courses, better brakes, but as far as the fans, as far as the racing product, you know, NASCAR has been famous on the road courses for races, you know, the slipping and sliding, right? Because these cars were never meant to go on road courses. It's like, we were putting oval cars on road courses. And now it's like with the next gen car, we're putting road course cars on ovals, you know, this year. So, you know, we don't get as much as that slipping and sliding. Obviously, drivers are still a little bit on the edge, but they're not fighting the cars as much really as they are, say, in the Xfinity race, where they're just sliding around because, you know, those cars have been the same for years. So we've looked at, you know, I think we've had three road course races so far this year. It's been COTA, Sonoma, and now Road America. And we'll have Indianapolis road course in a few weeks. But the road course racing definitely has been as, you know, amazing as people would have thought, nor has the short track racing, right? Two types of racing where it's meant for, you know, a lot of, you know, in NASCAR has been famous for a lot of beating and banging, a lot of slipping and sliding around. So a lot of people have now been hating a little bit on the short tracks and the road courses. Yeah, they haven't been the most exciting races. I'm still waiting for the Bristol Night Race later this year. I'm hoping that'll be a good show with these cars. I'm definitely curious to see how those cars will race, but yeah, for sure. I mean, you talk about the way that Ty Gibbs fought, you know, Kyle Larson. We had like two of those, you know, type of storylines for both of the races this year, right? Ty Gibbs, the young guy, right, beats out Kyle Larson, beats a Cup guy fair and square to win that race. Tyler Reddick beats Chase Elliott, right, fair and square in that final battle to win the race. So two very interesting storylines. And just like you noted, that battle for the lead at the end of the Cup race definitely saved it. And one thing that I had thought of that I just remembered is like these, you know, these cars are more meant to drive on the road course, right? So you think sports cars, right? You think a sports car, you think IMSA. And those races aren't too much, you know, slipping and sliding around either. But do you think, you know, the difference is made IMSA? There's a lot of strategy involved, right? A lot of green flag racing, a lot of endurance racing. Do you think it kind of plays into the factor of the Cup Series racing having stages? Because in my opinion, and a lot of people look at it differently, a lot of people really enjoy stages. Stages on road courses is a whole nother thing. I thought that final green flag pit stop is what changed the entire race. Like, I think like it just blew it open as far as like, you know, it just adds a whole nother element of strategy, basically. I mean, how quick your pit stop's going to be, and especially with the pit stops now in the next gen cars, like they mean so much. And do you think that's kind of a factor of why the racing isn't as great? Because we got these cars that handle great, right? We're running long races, but they're not necessarily like endurance races. We're not running them straight green. We're doing a run and then we're just racking them back up to go.
Yeah, you're right. It is definitely, we talked about it. We were texting during the race and we were talking about how, you know, the cars, because they're more perfected now. I think I heard this somewhere. I might've been on another podcast of some NASCAR guys, NASCAR journalists, and they were saying how the cars are a little more perfect now. And cars are not slipping and sliding like we usually see them. Xfinity still kind of slips and slides, but also those cars are pretty nimble compared to the Gen 6 Cup cars. You know, thinner tire for sure, but they are lighter. They're a little more narrow, you know, they don't have a wide body set. So for sure. I mean, I do think when you compare it to IMSA, I have not watched enough IMSA sports car racing to exactly know. I have watched every year, like the Rolex 24, but not really like a 6 hours at Watkins Glen or whatever it is, a 2 hour, 40 minute IMSA race. I really don't watch those necessarily, but I can tell you one thing. With NASCAR and the Cup Series right now, cars are a little bit more closely competitive, right? Cars come from kind of one kit, one box, and you kind of play in that area, even though the more money teams, the underfunded teams have that space from the cars who have from the teams who have a lot of money, like Hendrick, Trackhouse, let's say throw Penske in there, Joe Gibbs, Stewart Haas Racing. Those guys can use their money to up their road course game. But you see Michael McDowell with the equality come into the top 10. We know Michael's very capable of finishing in the top 10 at road courses, but this car has changed that. And he said, this car gives us a chance to finish up in the top 5 and top 10. So when you look at that perspective compared to IMSA, I know those cars are not all the same. Literally, cars have different bodies. Like the BMW is completely different from the Lexus, and the Lexus is completely different from the Mercedes. Some of them are slung back coupes or roadsters. It's just that's how you know their kind of racing is. So that also plays a different factor into it. I'm not sure if they have different cut tire compounds in them. So I'm pretty sure they don't, but I'm just saying if they do, that's definitely another thing. You said strategy for sure. These stages breaks it up into a little race, and a little bit of a longer race. You know what I mean? And then when you look at IMSA, it's just one long 6-hour race, and you got to place your strategies within there. I think it's also a little easy for us to say that the Cup car is exactly like the IMSA sports cars now, just because there's a few components that are similar. They're really not exactly the same, obviously, but there's a lot of components that, you know, there are a few components that are similar. So that's kind of why we lend ourselves to do that, to think that way. And also the tires are much more wider now, lower camber. Goodyear has definitely made it look very sports car like. So, yeah, I mean, those are good points. I'm not exactly sure on the whole thing. I do think that, you know, the original statement that we both made, the cars being a little more perfected, they're not slipping and sliding around. We lost that NASCAR effect a little bit. I think Road America also lends itself to being a lot more strung out because it is a longer track, you know, it's 4 miles long. So it lets guys, you know, who are super good, like Chase Elliott, every lap, every turn, every straightaway, pound away and get away from the guy in second, get away from the guy in third. And that's what you saw on Sunday. It was like Larson was 17 seconds back to the leader, you know? So it's sad because I really want to see, like, I didn't want, you know, the short tracks and the road courses take a hit and then the mile and a halfs go up in excitement. You know, like the mile and a halfs have been pretty good this year, but the Martinsville sucked. Martinsville completely stank. And then we see the road courses. They've taken a little bit of a hit. They're not as crazy anymore. I'm really excited to see if they don't make any changes for the road course car anymore. Like when they, because I think for the short tracks, like at least in the next Martinsville race, they're going to take off the diffuser, which is probably a great idea to do that. But if they don't change anything for the next couple of road course races and finish out the year, I'm really excited to see how the Roval will be.
Yeah.
Because I really think the Roval will be a great track because that's a track you can't get really strung out. It's very tight. There's a couple of elevation changes, especially when you get out to NASCAR turn two ish. So or turn one and turn two or whatever. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how the Roval plays out. The road course at Indy, thinking that's going to be like Road America, man. It's going to get strung out. It's very flat. I think it's going to be more or less the exact same thing. Then, you know, we think we go to Watkins Glen. I think Watkins Glen, hey, Sonoma for me was a pretty good race. I enjoyed it. I know the last couple, like that last stint, you know, where Daniel Suarez kind of, you know, got out into a big lead. That kind of got a little boring for fans maybe, but sometimes you get that, you know what I mean? And that's a proper road course race too. Sometimes you get that. So I think Watkins Glen being a proper NASCAR road course, you know, Sonoma and Watkins Glen are our original road courses. So with Watkins Glen, I think we could see a lot more of a competitive race there, maybe because we have a notebook. Like teams have notebooks there, thick notebooks. So yeah, we'll just have to see how it goes. I think we'll see a bad Indy RC. And then we'll see a pretty good Watkins Glen. And I think we're going to see a really good Roval race. You throw in the playoffs into that whole situation too. So that's going to be great. I think that's my opinion.
Yeah. It's just always chaos. The Roval, I think it'll always be a show no matter what. And you know, that kind of leads us into talking about like themselves building next year's schedule, right? A lot of talk has been about Road America. Is it going to come back? Do enough people want it to come back? Me personally, like I think the area seems great. Like a lot of people at the track, you know, me, like I can't speak on being there because I wasn't there, but a lot of people at the track have been saying, hey, Wisconsin's fan loves NASCAR. I mean, they're all turning out. Last year, the inaugural event was, I thought, great. You know, one of the best weekends of the year for sure. 4th of July just seems like a great tradition to be in Road America. And I think the track itself is a great racetrack. Like, you know, even before Cup went there, I mean, we saw so many great Xfinity Series races there. And I'm sure there's a lot of great road course races that happens there, like Trans Am, everything that they do there. But it's a really great racetrack, great dynamic racetrack, a lot of different corners. I think it's a great road course, very long one, obviously, but I think it's a great road course. And the talk of bringing a Chicago Street Course in, not totally opposed to it. it sucks that we would have to, you know, that they want to recycle out Road America and bring that in instead. Like, you know, unfortunately we do have to trade out tracks. We can't have a gigantic schedule. But you know, bringing it in, I'm not totally opposed to it, just to see how it would go. You know, me being from Chicago, like, you know, being downtown a lot, knowing the city very well, just me personally, obviously, you know, it hits in the heart. Like, yeah, I want to see that. Might be pretty cool. Chicagoland Speedway, on the other hand, obviously a lot more NASCAR fans would rather see that come back, and maybe it will. So, you know, as far as the schedule next year, and then you bring up Indy Road Course, obviously me personally for the longest time has just been saying, keep the cup on the oval, right? Keep the cup on the big course. Let's run Xfinity on the road course. They already got trucks at IRP now. They finally did that. Now we just want one more pissing, you know, one more missing piece. Let's bring the Brickyard 400 back. And I think, like, I feel like with how the cars have performed on the mile and a half, obviously the mile and a half's like Kansas is way different than Indianapolis, but could that motivate NASCAR to see that racing and be like, okay, maybe there's a chance it could be a little better here on the Indianapolis Oval? And that's what I think. I just think the weekend could be nice. Like, we'd have the Xfinity on the road course too, and IndyCar. I forget IndyCar's there that weekend too. Like, you'd have this big weekend, and then you cap it off with Cup Series, you know, on the Brickyard 400. And I feel like I've said that like 100 billion times, but I want it to happen. And like, do you think that they could make that move? Like, let's just talk about the schedule in general. Like, a few questions I'll throw at you. Like, do you think Road America gets taken off? Do you think it should take off? Do you think it should stay? And then, you know, you can note on the Indy Road Course as well, and what they should do with that.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk with the Chicago Street Course. You know, I'll get to the Indianapolis Road Course after. To make it short and sweet, I kind of want to see Road America off, not just after this weekend. I just don't think, like, NASCAR, it just doesn't look good. I don't know. Yeah. I just really don't like it.
I hope they keep Xfinity there. If they're going to move the Cup race, I really hope they do at least keep Xfinity Series there. Because an Xfinity Series place. Like, you know, Xfinity always goes to Road America. And even when they did by themselves before, like, they had great turnouts. Like, there were good crowds there. The weekend was great. Heck, throw the Truck Series in there too. Let's do an Xfinity little truck weekend too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and then if you keep the schedule from trucks going to Road America to Mid Ohio, you kind of have two road courses, and the truck schedule can be kind of extended a little bit. Depends on, you know, teams and stuff like that. But that's for another day to talk about. But particularly for, I'd say, Xfinity at Road America. Yeah, but if you're going to take Cup to Chicago Street Course, downtown Chicago, I think you got to bring a support race. You got to show youngsters, you know what I mean? And as much as I really like Xfinity at Mid-Ohio, I mean, at Road America, it's more of a, I don't know, it's more of a TV deal for NASCAR, right? I mean, like, much for, in a Cup perspective, how much viewership, which I don't think is out yet from this past Sunday's race, but if it is, let me know. I didn't check, but yeah. So if it is a great number, then NASCAR can look at that and it's productive. And most likely the Chicago Street Course deal is already done, and the schedule is about to be, you know, announced or whatever later this summer.
Yeah.
So Road America's off, or it is, I mean, or it's not, you know, it's if Chicago Street Course is in, Road America's out, this is already a done deal. The TV viewership doesn't matter. They kind of already have an idea of where that was going to go. So, you know, Chicago Street Course is a great marketing option for NASCAR.
It'll get big numbers regardless.
Exactly. And if Road America is not superseding those things, it's just Road America is not working out. You know what I mean? That's going to be the first to go. So I don't really see any other road course that can be off. I've seen people like comment like different things on Twitter and say, you know, they should just stop going to Indianapolis altogether. Not going to happen. There's more there. There's more NASCAR ties to Indianapolis than there are to Road America. And the Chicago Street Course offers amazing opportunity. And I think for me personally, you have to take your Xfinity cars there too. Trucks, not necessarily. It looked kind of funny down there if you brought trucks down there.
That would be the most awful race.
It would be a bad race. So, you know, and that's how you would open up the weekend. And if you're trying to get people, like, let's say the cup race is not sold out and people go to the truck race or the Xfinity race and they're like, okay, let's go see how this is. And then they're like not buying a cup ticket because how horrible the truck race was or something like that. Let's just say that. So it's just, it's all comes down to a business deal here. You know what I mean? And I really like your idea for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The Brickyard 400 is no longer the Brickyard 400 without it being on the oval, obviously. Yeah. And it kind of stinks to see that crown jewel go away. I'd like to see how this car performs on the Indianapolis Oval. Obviously, I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon. I'd like to, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would like that idea going back to the Oval. The road course excites me. I like more road courses on the schedule. But I always loved, like, if something was a tradition, keep with that tradition.
Yeah.
Let's see how the new car is. Let's give it a shot. You know what I mean? They got rid of it because it wasn't exciting. Yeah, it wasn't. It was, I mean, I think, what, 2017, right? Or the one that Kane won, that was like the whole worst race of all time.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So it was like one of the most dooming, like, you just didn't want to go there. Like, drivers didn't want to race on that track. Fans didn't want to see it after a couple of years, and you had to spice it up with something new. I think the road course was the answer for a couple of years, and I think with this new car, give it an opportunity, put it on the Oval, and let's see how it does. I know probably they can't be changing it every year, but it would be interesting to see how it is on the Oval. But yeah. Besides that, I love NASCAR to do the Chicago Street Course. I wouldn't mind to see Road America going off. And if that meant Xfinity not going to Road America as well, I'm fine with that too. See how the Chicago thing goes. It probably won't be more than a 3-year deal anyways. Head back to Road America after if the Chicago thing doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. So I definitely be, you know, interested to see how the Chicago Street Course works. Like you noted, it's going to be a big market. It's going to be a big hit on TV deals. We know for sure. Hopefully on NBC instead of USA, because I guess USA is.
Oh, I definitely will be.
Oh, 100%.
Hey, can I throw in something real quick?
Yeah.
I actually was speaking to this with someone else, and I told them that I would love for NBC to kick off there. I know Nashville is a great place to kick off NBC's portion, but in my opinion, I think if you put Chicago Street Course next year, kick off the NBC schedule with that race. That's my opinion.
Huge.
You know, that would be really, really cool. Let's get like the TV up in like some rooftop, like bar deck area to like introduce the race. Maybe get some like Chicago music down there or whatever, you know, some of the music that's close to there.
Rutledge Wood could actually be at the racetrack because Rutledge City View. They wouldn't have to kick him out because he'd already be in the city.
Right. Because, I mean, you were at the Nashville race and you know how it was. Like last year on TV, the road of the Nashville race looked electric. Like that atmosphere was fantastic. This year, through the TV, at least for me, it kind of lost that feel. Yeah. I'd love to see them spice it up with Chicago. That would be super cool. And obviously, I don't think you would mind it either, considering, you know, your ties to Chicago. So
I think
it would just be a really exciting weekend, you know, like to kick it off downtown Nashville. You're still at a stadium style racetrack. You know, you're not downtown. Like, you know, they're sending Rutledge down there, unfortunately, which I don't like. I mean, yeah. Anyways, but I would just love to see them kick off their portion of the season there. I think that would be cool.
And it's fresh. That's the key word is fresh. And that's how you kick off the season, right? What made Nashville so cool kicking off the year, obviously NBC's got a great, you know, broadcasting crew. The way they present everything is, you know, very nice. But what made it 10 times better is that Nashville was fresh. It was new. And they took full advantage of it. And there were a lot of celebrities. There were a lot of big names. I mean, huge names in Nashville. I mean, Michael Jordan, I don't think he was out there for the race on Sunday. I didn't see him on the grid. But there were a lot of celebrities out there, a lot of big names. But as you said, you know, obviously they didn't sell out the crowd like they did last year. And that could be said. There's a lot of factors that go into that. Obviously, the racing product on the track is good, but it's all about the fan experience as well, right? You know, the whole cooler thing was one thing. It was like 97 degrees at the racetrack. I mean, it was hot. It was hot, man. It was sunny and hot. And, you know, it was tough. It was tough staying out there. And I can't even imagine like me being in the garage area, being able to just grab some waters here and there, you know, from teams, get some shade under the haulers, you know, guys in the stands. I mean, it must have sucked. It must have been brutal. It must have been terrible, to be honest.
You're not used to that weather either. You know
exactly
what I mean?
If you're not used to it. And a lot of them really aren't. It's not like they're hardcore fans that are going out to Talladega every single year and just dealing with it. Like, these are Nashville people that are just kind of first coming onto the scene. And that's why I think having these races, like, I get the markets and everything. I get, you know, I get TV ratings and all that stuff. And if the race is on NBC, sure. If you want to do it, if you'd rather do it at 3 o'clock, sure. But damn, like that Xfinity race, like I thought, like, man, at least run that at night. You know what I mean? And I felt like the whole weekend could have been run at night, to be honest, in my opinion.
It would have been fantastic.
It would have been great. Yeah. It would have been much better. You would have I guarantee you would have seen a ton of more fans come to the race. If it were
maybe even a better race,
because there were a lot of people. Yeah, maybe even a better race too. Just a day and night transition race. Like, come on, like green flag 6-7 o'clock. Let's go.
Right,
because that was a weird start time, man. 5 o'clock Eastern.
It was right
local time. That was the weirdest start time. I can't remember last time a race started there. Like, if it wasn't a rain delay, like that was the scheduled start time. It was 5 Eastern on NBC. I was like, oh, interesting. So. But yeah,
we ended up getting a little bit of a night race anyways. I completely forget how the race played out.
Yeah, because of the rain. And what was weird is
on
the
Eastern side, for sure.
Yeah, and if it didn't rain, like if there were no rain delays, the race would have still ended in the bright sun in Nashville. Maybe not bright sun, but like right as the sun was setting. So there would have been no night racing at all. It would have still been scorching hot the entire race, but it was just starting at 5. So I don't know what, you know, obviously it was probably TV that made him start then. But yeah, just kind of flipping back and wrapping up with this, like, Chicago street course would be fresh. It would be new to kick off the season. Everybody would tune in. Obviously NBC would love it. And maybe that's what they're doing, right? They're talking about doing it over the summer. Obviously NBC kicks off its season right when summer's getting going, right at the end of June. I think that would be perfect to get started up, and you can run Nashville would still be a summer weekend, right? Just probably push it back a weekend or something like that. And then the other talk, I think, was making Chicagoland Speedway a playoff race, like using, if they were to add Chicagoland Speedway in two, using the Chicago street course to promote Chicagoland Speedway for the playoffs, I think could be cool as well. You know, it was a great area, you know, to have a race. Me personally, just going there all the time as a youngin, it was a nice area. Obviously didn't draw as well. There's not much around the racetrack. Like, if you've never been to Chicagoland Speedway, it's a ghost town when you're driving out there. And a few tracks are like that.
Kind of like Homestead a little bit.
Yeah. There are tracks like that on the schedule that don't have things around it, but still draw a lot better than Chicago did. So hopefully maybe, hey, Chicago street course, they do it. They promote going to Chicagoland Speedway. And when you go to like a street course race, there's going to be a ton of people who don't watch NASCAR or have never heard of NASCAR that are just going to pull up and see what's going on and all of a sudden become a fan. And then maybe they see, oh, they're doing this again in Chicagoland Speedway. And whenever the playoffs start, September, shoot, let's go. Let's buy tickets. Let's go there right now. So
yeah,
that's their goal, I would imagine. That's just what I think of in my head. If they did two Chicago races, which would be crazy because it was like 2 years ago, they were kicking Chicagoland off the schedule saying, yeah, Chicagoland market sucks. Not going back there. Let's, you know, destroy the track. And now all of a sudden they're like Chicago, the city of Chicago. Well, Joliet is Chicagoland Speedway, but Chicago in general might get two races on the 23 schedule. It's like, well, it's crazy how that all happened, but could be a product of the mile and a half racing that we've seen lately. And I don't know, a lot of factors go into it though.
Yeah, for sure. And it was a pretty track too. I mean, in my opinion, it's a pretty track. So one more thing on that, it would be great to start the NBC season the second half of the year at the downtown Chicago race. That'd be a great commercial for NBC too. NASCAR is back. We're doing it downtown. You know, it seems for me like a win-win situation. I hope when the schedule comes out, I doubt it's like that, but that was just a random thought I had this past weekend. And I think that's a great idea. And also if you want to get new fans into the sport, Chicago kind of opens up that TV market as well for people to watch on TV, kind of like the LA Coliseum did. You can get a different kind of music over there. Nashville, yeah, it was just country music. Not that I have anything against that, but you know, there's multiple avenues to be played here. And it's for the people at track. It's for the people that, you know, you show the concert on TV, people that are watching on TV. And then also you said, you know, reigniting Chicagoland Speedway, which I think it's such a useful track. It's just sitting there. And, you know, it's not like it's out of style or anything like that. It was a very well manicured track. I think Kansas Speedway is like the nicest mile and a half, in my opinion, at least by TV standards. The grass around the track is beautiful. The track is very manicured well. It's not very, you know, the pavement looks good. It's not very worn out. And I think Chicagoland Speedway was almost the same. It's very, very nice track. Where Nashville Super Speedway, it's kind of like a funny looking track. The grandstands only go like to a certain point on one side, and the other side it's longer. It's just, you know, that's how it's built and stuff, all I'm saying. But Chicagoland Speedway is a very nice, proper track that NASCAR, you know, has there to use, but they're not. And Yeah. So, or that there's still that idea to turn it into a short track, but my opinion, that's a bad idea.
Yeah. I think it's definitely
kind of nice like that track. Auto club idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God.
Which I feel like it's going to get canceled here. I don't know why.
I haven't heard anything about it. So we'll see, but yeah. It was definitely like the surface aged, right? It's going to be aged. If we go back there, it's going to be aged a few years because we haven't raced there since 2019. Yeah. 2019 was the last race that we had there. So could definitely put on a good show. So, hey, about 12 years ago, there was a guy who won at Chicagoland and his name was David Ruderman driving the 00 for Michael Walsh.
Great segue.
Oh yeah. And so David Ruderman, he won there about 12 years ago at Chicagoland Speedway. I think that was the first cup race that I ever attended because I saw a bunch of nationwide races before that. But then I remember that was my first big cup race that I attended. And I was like, God, David Ruderman won. Wow. Sick. You know, as a little kid, I was expecting like
an odd winner,
Kyle Busch or you know, Jimmy Johnson. And all of a sudden it was David Ruderman. So that was cool to see, but I've been trying to get a conversation with him for almost a year now. And I look back at the last time I texted him, it was like a year ago. And so much stuff has happened from now to then. And I was like, man, we're going to kick off this little, you know, we're going to call it like the second season of the Drivers Meeting podcast here, starting this back up again. We're going to have some good guests on here. So me and you got the pleasure of talking to him, David Ruderman. We're going to bring him on the show here in just a second.
It's been 42 races since the aforementioned rain-shortened victory at Charlotte. That's it. David Ruderman wins at Chicago.
Great run by Edwards also, but incredible run by Ruderman.
Mr. David Ruderman, it's so glad to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here. And I kind of want to kick it right off a question asking about the dirt side. You've been so, you know, invested in dirt racing over the last few years, obviously since your departure from NASCAR, you know, a team owner, a crew chief, a driver, you've done it all on the dirt side. And I was just wondering, you know, as NASCAR starts to transition into a lot of dirt races, the Cup Series is now on dirt at Bristol and the Truck Series has been doing dirt for a few years now. What do you think the biggest challenge is from, you know, I'd say for the team's perspective, converting these cars over and changing week to week, right? 1 week they're on a pavement track, and then the next week they're going to a dirt track. What do you think the biggest change or biggest transition is for these teams as they head into those weekends?
Yeah, I mean, you know, fortunately for a lot of those guys, you know, NASCAR's got a fairly tight box, so they can't really go too far outside of that in most situations. It's such a different mentality, really. You know, all the stuff that you generally try to do to make pavement cars go fast, you generally don't do on dirt, you know, and you have there's a lot going on in dirt racing. You know, you have, the visibility and the track surface changing as the race goes on, which, I mean, we run into some of that with the pavement stuff too, with longer cup races, you know, and from starting in day going into the night, the track changes completely. And but that's just standard issue on a dirt track. And it may change 3 or 4 or 5 times during the course of the race that you have to adapt. Bottom weight may come in, the top may come in. Very seldom can you run around the middle. You have to adapt a lot and you have to adjust a lot. And I think that's what makes a lot of the dirt guys, you know, if you've got a guy like, say, like a Kyle Larson or someone like that, who's obviously very talented anyway. But if you get a guy that's is used to having to search around to find a different area to go fast, I mean, I think that's an advantage no matter what surface you're on. So I think guys are looking at it from that point of view. It's like, hey, you know, we need to learn to be a little more open-minded and realize that we may have to move around more than we used to have to. And, you know, guys in the Cup Series are obviously very, very good. In any of those top series really are very good. And those guys can generally adapt pretty well, but it is a different mentality for sure, especially for crew chiefs.
Yeah, for sure. And you think as a driver, there's still some tips you can take that, like, you know, even yourself that have learned from like pavement racing and different grooves and just the longevity of races. Can you take any of those tips, you know, from like pavement racing and use a few of them on dirt racing, just like a racer's mentality?
Well, the dirt races that I don't really watch much racing anymore, but the races I've seen they're generally, number one, if you have a windshield in a car, you can't fully prepare a dirt track like it needs to be prepared. You can't overwater it. You can't make it tacky. You can't make it, you know, you can't have a track that builds a cushion because visibility would be very, very tough with the windshields, obviously. You know, the first thing they need to do is jerk the front rear windshield out of them, give those guys some tear offs and let them go race. Prepare the racetrack like a true dirt track would be. Because truthfully, what you're seeing most of the time as the race goes on, it gets dusty and it gets very, very hard to swing. You're kind of seeing a watered down version of the dirt track. It's not a dirt track. It's like a slick pavement track. You got to drive them straight. You can't get them hung out very far, or you're going to pay the price. And that's not. I mean, there is a certain aspect of that in dirt racing as well, but that's not true dirt racing. And I mean, if there's a windshield in there, they got to keep the track dry to keep them from getting covered up. I mean, you know, that's not. In my opinion, that's not a true dirt race.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I've been, you know, watching these NASCAR races over the last few years at the dirt tracks. Like I always, you know, I'm not obviously a dirt expert, but I look at the way the tracks are like prepared, like the way they prepared, you know, Knoxville for the truck race. I felt like last year when they did it for the first time, wasn't prepared as well. And a lot of people had noted on that. This year, they think it was prepared a little bit better. We saw a better racing product. But I definitely feel like, you know, the preparation of a dirt track is probably one of the most important things, you know, as far as like the quality of a race and what you can do as a driver, how many lanes there are.
Yeah. I mean, and truthfully, preparing a dirt track is more art than science. Those guys that in those areas are very, very good at track prep. And again, they know what they're doing. They know all the contents of their surfaces, how much of one element versus another that they have in their surface. It's just not dirt. You know, it's just not just like throw a surface down and race on it. It's these guys are constantly prepping and doing things. And at the end of the day, it's still a dirt track. It may get rough. It may get dusty. It may get heavy and wet, depending on, you know, how much rain you get or how much, you know, water they put on the surface. I mean, it's anybody's guess, but those guys, some guys in different parts of the country are very, very good at preparing those types of racetracks. And, you know, it's such, unfortunately, a lot of them seem to take that knowledge with them because a lot of the guys are older guys and they've been preparing dirt tracks for generations. And, you know, they just have it's like being around a good chef. You know, they know how much of a pinch of this and pinch of that is, right? And they don't really have any formula written down. They just do it. And that's kind of the way those guys do it.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely, it's big in preparations of a track. You think a guy like, you know, I the first one that I always saw when I first started watching dirt racing, obviously, was Eldora, because that was the first one that was like more nationally put on the scene. And you think, you know, over time for those truck races, I don't know how much you watch the truck races at Eldora, but you think, you know, they had a lot, you know, a lot of work in front of them, a heavy task in front of them. You think they did a good job?
I think they did a good job for sure. I mean, I think the shows were well attended. Everything has a shelf life, you know, and you know, you get the oh boy, there's a dirt track, and everybody's watching, and everybody's, and then after a couple races on the dirt, you know, people seem to want something different. I think they did a good job. I think they did a very good job. But again, you know, they're in a box because they have to prepare the racetrack a certain way, you know, and it's not the way they would normally prepare the dirt track, because of the windshields and the things of that nature. So, you know, again, it's like, you're not really turning the dirt track prep guys loose because they have to keep the track as smooth as they can. They have to keep it packed down and they have to kind of keep it dry. And that's not really what they're used to by any means.
Yeah, exactly. So it's tough. And like with rain too, like a lot of people, I know like a lot of fans like question, like when it rains or like have a heavy rainstorm at the dirt track, they're like, oh, why don't you just send them out? But that's usually kind of an issue for especially those kind of cars, right? If it's too wet.
Yeah, it is. I mean, those tracks are, even though they may not look that like it's that big a deal, and those places are extremely slick whenever that's wet. That is a problem for sure. And it's a problem on pavement cracks too, right? I mean, yeah. If it rains, you know, you can't just turn them loose, right?
Exactly.
But at the same time, certainly a pavement track is a lot easier to dry, depending on the situation. Then if a dirt track seems to, you know, it soaks in. But, you know, a lot of dirt tracks, if they know when coming, they'll take and they'll get out there and they'll pack that thing down as compact as they can get it. So essentially what they call sealing the track over, which helps the water run off of it and not soak in as much, so they can get back on it quicker and get started preparing the track for, racetrack activities and stuff. So, again, there's far more art and science on that stuff, but there's a little bit of both mixed in.
Hey, David, thank you for doing this. Just wanted to ask you, I know you mentioned about NASCAR and you may not watch too many races, but out of the ones you do watch, do you like any young driver in particular?
Truthfully, I've tried to, by design, remove myself from watching much, because again, you know, it's kind of like a recovering drug addict. You know, you don't go back and hang out in that crowd if you're trying to trying to get past that again. And it's not because I'm bitter at the sport and like that. It's just like for mentally. If I can't be involved in it, I just don't really want to be involved in it at all. So I don't know that there's any young driver that I particularly have heard a lot about or really watched race a whole lot. I know there's all kinds of new guys coming to the sport, and I don't think I really recognize the sport as well as I used to. So I'm probably not the guy. I mean, obviously you can't open anything or read anything without generally something being said about Kyle Larson and things of that nature. That's one thing I do like, a guy that can race on any type of surface and win in it. So if you're going back in time, the Mario Andretti, the AJ Foyt of the time period, they could race a sprint car race one day and win, and then go to a pavement track the next, driving a full body stock car and win. I have always admired those guys that are just very, very well-rounded drivers. And it appears, for the most part, certainly guys like Tony Stewart and Ryan Newman was always an open wheel guy first and foremost, to see what Larson does on a pre-regular basis, racing a late model, then a sprint car, then back to a cup car. That in itself is pretty impressive to me just because of the versatility you have to have.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, I love seeing the versatility of drivers for sure. And you know, I know, you know, you haven't watched the sport as much and stuff like that, but like, I did have one question, like for those dirt races, like have you ever gotten a call or text from anyone to do like a truck dirt race or anything like that? Or just, would that ever interest you?
There was some talk, you know, especially early on when things started happening, because I was kind of known as a dirt guy, some truck teams, but it was never anything I felt like, you know, we could run really well in and things of that nature. So, that is the one thing that you know about the dirt stuff is you don't need your best motor. You don't need your best chassis, and all that stuff like that, because, you know, you can't ever hook to it. You can't ever keep them from spinning the tires anyway. So the least amount of horsepower you're better off with, really.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, it would, you know, I had offers, but not anything that was ever what I felt like was, you know, really, really good. Nothing ever became of it. I certainly didn't shoot it down, but, you know, you got to be realistic about those things.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't for me at the time. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I got one last question for you. It's about Chicagoland Speedway. And I know that was my first ever cup race that I ever went to was at Chicagoland Speedway, because it was sort of my home track. And you were the guy that took the checkered flag for that race. And, you know, as a guy that raced there in the past, obviously it went away. There's like some talk about it coming back. I mean, you know, you haven't raced on it in a while, but I always felt like it was track, you know, just because it was my home track. I had a little bit of bias, but I did like the racing, you know, the racing service, the racing track. Like, do you think it's a track that they should bring back? And did you like personally?
Yeah, I mean, I like the racetrack, especially because the things went well there for that one race. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, it is a cool racetrack. I mean, I've always thought that in the area that it was in, it would probably draw better, as far as crowds and things of that nature.
Yeah.
The place never seemed to take off as well as I would have thought it would have. And that's certainly not because it's not a nice facility, because it is a very nice place. And if there's talk of it coming back, geez, I would love to see that place come back.
Yeah.
Just because it's a pretty special place to me. Yeah, you hate to see any racetrack, no matter what. I mean, there's been racetracks that, growing up as a young man, that I raced that I did not like at all. But and then eventually they get, you know, sometimes dirt tracks and stuff, and pavement tracks for that matter, get closed down, get developed or things of that nature. And you're like, man, that place was never really very good to me, but I sure do miss it. And so you don't ever want to see any racetrack get closed down, no matter what it is. And I certainly don't want to see Chicagoland for multiple reasons. But yeah, that was always a pretty racy place. I had multiple grooves. It's pretty neat. I mean, I know it's a mile and a half, so, you know, a lot of people call it a cookie cutter type of racetracks, you know, but it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I like it. I love to see it come back. But yeah, anyways, man, I appreciate you talking to me today. It's been great to talk to you. And you know, hopefully we'll talk again soon. I'll definitely try to keep following along with the dirt season. Keep it going.
Yes, sir. All right. You guys have a good day. Thank you.
You too, man.
Running crew chief down to Phil Parsons.
Rodney Childers, how about win number two? Now, this one had no rain involved. This was the full distance, 400 miles, baby.
I don't even know what to say, really. These guys did a hell of a job and brought a good car here, and I don't even know what to say.
You guys did a great job here. You had flawless pit work. Had a little bit of a scare when you talked about a vibration, but you told me you thought that was just low air pressure.
Yeah, it went away after a few laps, and TRD did a really good job, and sorry I'm so emotional, but really wanted this for David, you know. He wanted to win one on his own, and ever since we won that deal at Charlotte, he really wanted to do it on his own. So, you know, this one's for him, and everybody at TRD did a really good job. It's nice to have Tom's on the car, everybody at Aaron's, and, man, I don't know what to say. I'd like to say hey to my wife and kids at home.
Rodney, by the way, he didn't do it by himself, buddy.
So that was David Ruderman. Thank you so much to David for coming on the show and talking with us today. Great to talk to him. Great to kind of hear an update of what he's been doing. Cause you know, there's a lot of people who don't know me personally, just being able to check out his stuff, trying to contact him, you know, finding out he's doing a lot of dirt racing, obviously, as he's explained, and, you know, hasn't like when you asked him or you asked him about what his favorite young driver was. And he hasn't really been watching NASCAR, which is kind of like a surprise, kind of not, because there are a lot of, you know, drivers that used to run in NASCAR who do still watch it and still keep up with it week to week. But I guess a guy like David Ruderman isn't watching NASCAR much anymore. Obviously, he did know Kyle Larson. He's a very, you know, worldwide name at this point, very household name. But it was it, do you think it was a little surprising to you that David doesn't watch NASCAR really much anymore?
Not really. I mean, he mentioned in like the beginning part of the interview where he was like watching some races, like what he could catch. So that's when I thought he may have heard, like, you know, oh, Tyler Reddick or
he could Bruce be busy Kill, too,
you know, like, for sure. I mean, you know, I mean, like for him, I don't know exactly what he's doing. Obviously we know what he's doing on his racing side of stuff, but on a Sunday, you know, if he watches a cup race, you know, it's pretty normal to think that a former race car driver that raced in the Cup Series for many years watched, you know, continues watching NASCAR. But then I also heard, you know, Carl Edwards doesn't watch it much anymore. They've asked him many, many times, like whenever he's had that random appearance on Fox or something like that. He's like, you know, I just haven't been able to catch a race lately. I think Greg Biffle, low key, still watches Cup Series racing. I'm pretty sure he does.
Oh, he races.
But I'm saying like on the part-time schedule.
Yeah,
you know, like on weekends where he's not racing, you know, so
yeah, that's true.
You know, I know he's doing a little SRX now, so that's good for him. But yeah, I mean, Greg and some of these guys that I feel like you're probably more prone to watch racing if you left the sport in the proper way. But if you kind of just got shoved out without a ride, you maybe don't watch it anymore. Maybe a little spite feeling. Yeah. Not saying that David's in that situation, but, you know, just saying like any other driver, like Mark Martin, he still watches racing for sure. He's still active on Twitter. He's still into all those kinds of things. So that's cool. I didn't really find it too surprising that he doesn't watch it. I found his answer to be quite good. You know, Kyle Larson, obviously, like you said, he's quickly becoming a household name, a little worldwide too, where you even European racing fans know his name. So, and obviously, you know, you have Kyle with the dirt connection to David. So David's going to probably root for a dirt guy. I assumed he was going to pick like Chase Briscoe or something or Tyler Reddick, you know, dirt guys like that. Maybe he like mentored one of those guys. Not maybe followed their whole racing career, but maybe raced against them once or twice or something like that at some, you know, short dirt track kind of thing. So, Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, it didn't sound entirely surprising to me. People have their own lives. They move on from different things. And, you know, if that's where his passion is, dirt racing, ask yourself this. Kyle Larson in 10, 15 years time, you think he's going to be watching every cup race if he's going dirt racing on Saturday nights? I don't think so. Yeah. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was good to talk to David. And one guy that's not on the NASCAR scene anymore that I want to note before we head to the next thing, Ryan Newman, got his SRX win this weekend. Yeah. Just thought it was really cool to see because I think he had an interview or he had a segment, I think the week before, saying kind of like the only thing he wants is just to be in victory lane with his family. And he got just that, you know, in the SRX series, which is still a pretty credible win. Obviously, a lot of talented drivers.
But it is, for sure.
Winning at Stafford, winning at Short Track. Yeah, and I think he's the points leader too. He's been doing good all year long. So now halfway through the season, he could get that SRX title. But Ryan Newman, you know, just great to see back in victory lane. And that segment that they did air like a week ago, showing his Daytona 500 car, I think, for the first time and what had happened like to the seat, the window. You know, I mean, we all obviously know how that unfolded with Corey LaJoie's car going straight in to the seat of Ryan Newman and him saying like he doesn't remember any of the crash, but he wants to, you know, keep the car because that's all he'll have of the memory of it, which is crazy. But you know, just all in all, great to see him win at Stafford. Me personally, I've been begging for the last like 7 months for somebody to put him in an Xfinity car. Like, I know he's only going to take like the best opportunity he can get, but like, especially with qualifying being so important, Xfinity, like, I like, what's one of those cars? I mean, even like a Dale Jr. car, like that 88 Junior Motorsports car, like, shoot, just put him in for one race and see what he does. I'd love to see him in a car like that, like ripping around. And it was odd. He said he got calls from teams, but not the right offer. So I wonder what he means by that. Maybe just teams around the mid pack that were calling him to race. And maybe he just wasn't feeling it. I mean, do you personally think we'll ever see Ryan Newman back in NASCAR?
No. Yeah. I think so. I mean, you would think that Tony would give him a ride, right? Like run the 07, run like an SHR affiliated car. Yeah. I don't know if those guys would like to give up like New Hampshire or something. I think New Hampshire would be a fantastic race for him to race for him to choose that track. I think he'd have a great chance of winning that race. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think if he ran like an SHR affiliated car, I know, you know, he's in Tony's racing series. I think Tony would, you know, he was talking with Marco Andretti to run some oval races, I think, and maybe some road courses. Marco was interested in both of those. So I think if Ryan approached Tony, then I think that would be a great opportunity. And the relationship with Coca-Cola, not saying Coca-Cola is going to sign up to anything major here, but hey, one race deal, Coca-Cola the sponsor, you know, get the five car from BJ McLeod Motorsports and put Ryan in at New Hampshire, something like that.
Yeah, I'd love to see something like that for sure. So that'd be cool. Congratulations to Ryan Newman for winning the SRX Stafford. So we'll kind of keep talking about the Xfinity series here. We'll note back to Road America real quick. There was one notable incident that happened with the number 9 car, Noah Gregson. Obviously not the first time we've said that, definitely on this show, you know, talking with Tommy Joe all year last year. There's a lot of things we talked about regarding, you know, Noah Gregson and others.
Yeah.
But this one had to do something with Tommy Joe, which I would love to have Tommy Joe on the show right now, because he would probably rant. He probably wouldn't stop speaking for 40 minutes on this. He would be ranting like crazy, and I would love to hear it. I'd be here with popcorn, listen to all 40 minutes of it. But the incident basically was, if you didn't see it, it was Noah Gregson, Sage Karam battling. I believe how it started. I don't know who hit who first, but I think Sage Karam, I think what I caught kind of in the corner of this battle that they were showing is the final corner. What turn is it? I can't remember. How many turns there?
You go down turn one, then that's turn two. It's about the kink in turn three, I think. It's like that kink down the long straightaway, right?
When that happened. Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about what's the final corner of Road America. How many turns are there? I forgot.
14. Oh, there's 14 turns.
14?
Okay. Yeah,
14. That sounds about right. So just whatever the last corner was, I think Sage Karam went to pass Gregson.
Sure, yeah, there, okay.
And
yeah,
they made contact in that corner. You know, obviously with the, with, you know, Karam as the aggressor trying to make the pass, made contact with Gregson, got by him, obviously felt like he was the faster car in that situation. They get into turn one, where Noah Gregson then dives back on him. They make more contact. And then they go down into past turn two into turn three. And Sage Karam dives below him, but he said he got hit from behind. I didn't watch the replay enough. He might have, but it looked like a deal where they didn't hit in the middle of the corner, but he got off the corner, started slipping, and got into Gregson. Gregson got it in the grass. Both of them settled it out. We're side by side going down to the famed Sargento sign. And as me and you both know, only chaos happens at the Sargento sign, you know, whether it's Forza Motorsports 6 or on the racetrack. So, yeah. Noah Gregson just hooks the dead right. And he said, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being raced this way. And he hooked the dead right on the longest straightaway, or probably one of the longest straightaway on the track. I don't know if it's the longest, but hooked a right on Sage Karam and wrecked himself in the process. He did wreck Sage Karam. Sage Karam kind of turned and hit the wall. Gregson wrecked. And at first, like, it looked like it was going to be fine. Like, all right, they just got mad. Gregson spun him out. Obviously not a good idea, but it looks like they'll be fine. But then you forget all the grass, all the dirt starts spewing up on the racetrack, everyone coming down the straightaway. I don't think there were any spotters over there either, so nobody can see. And that's what led to a gigantic pileup, a pretty scary pileup, because obviously Brandon Brown was shaken up after, and I'm sure a lot of drivers were. I mean, there were massive hits. There were cars going airborne. Two or three of them went flying up in the air, but ended a lot of the days of a lot of those drivers running from 10th to 20th. All of them pretty much got wiped out, having very solid days. So, yeah, definitely interesting to see that unfold. We knew Twitter was going to have their opinions on the incident. We know Tommy Joe had his opinions on the incident, but first, you know, we'll get yours or mine personally. Obviously, you know, I'm going to sit here and not want to see an Alpha Prime racing car get torn up by Noah Gregson. You know, did Sage Karam rough him up? Yeah. I mean, he made the first move. He hit Noah Gregson first, I believe, unless there were things that were shown, like that word shown on TV that happened. We don't know the whole history, but on TV, Sage Karam hit him first going to that final corner. Noah Gregson got him back. Sage Karam hit again, whether that was intentional or not. They both, you know, rubbed off the corner. I think it's just the adrenaline of racing. He probably just got body slammed in turn one, so he wanted to get him back. Same way Noah Gregson felt like, I should get him back. So they're beating and they're banging, typical road course racing. And I'm sure that this type of stuff's happening all over the racetrack, right? I mean, especially in Xfinity Series, those guys are using each other up, especially in a truck series. My goodness, they're probably hitting each other every single lap. But, you know, they rough each other up a little bit side by side going to the Sargento sign, and Noah Gregson said, I'm done, wrecked him. Obviously, don't think that was very called for, because, you know, it's one thing to dump, like, the big thing is it's one thing to dump somebody in a corner, but it's another to just hook a dead right on a straightaway and wreck somebody and, you know, cause a gigantic crash like that. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest wrecks we've seen at Road America or road course in general. At all at, you know, in NASCAR. So huge wreck. Definitely, I felt like a little uncalled for from Noah Gregson. Wasn't given a penalty of the race. They said they did call him to the hauler. And I guess they said on Sirius XM this morning that, like, penalties, you know, could be given out. I don't think they will. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, other than that, it was a very, very scary incident. Glad everyone was okay. Everyone was okay. Brandon Brown was all good after the race. Just probably had to catch his breath on that one for sure. So definitely something that we didn't want to see there at Road America. But, you know, yourself, Matt, I know we both watched the incident unfold. We were both watching the Xfinity race. You know, in your opinion, what were your thoughts on that incident that occurred there? No Gregson. Was there anybody in the right or the wrong, or you think it's just a good old NASCAR deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think Noah is definitely in the wrong there. I mean, you were mentioning, you know, your connection to Alpha Prime, and, you know, you don't want to play favoritism, of course, but no. You don't have to be even associated with the team or even like the team. You just don't want to see those kinds of things. Yeah, right? I mean, not at all. It doesn't matter to who. It doesn't matter who's doing it either, right? Like, Noah is a favorited guy through the garage. I even like Noah too, because, I mean, I think he's good for the sport. He's funny. He's active on social media. But there's a little bit of immaturity with him in the whole racing deal. And I think exactly what I'm thinking has already been said, right? He has shown this kind of behavior before. It's probably not right for me to say right now, but I mean, because he has probably grown a lot as a driver back from like 2020, 2021, when he ran into Justin Allgaier, you know, to get that win at Bristol, I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, that's a teammate, right? Like, you got to know how to treat your teammates against some other guys. And then you got to know how to treat guys early in the race. I mean, this was in the final stage, I'm pretty sure. But the very beginning of the final stage, and considering it's Road America, you still have a long way to go in the race. So what I'm frustrated about slightly is NASCAR not penalizing him. I think there's got to be some little penalization system that NASCAR has precedent to bring in. You want to have, let's set a precedent, and let's show these guys, hey, if you do something completely blatant, you're going to have to go down pit road. You're going to have to park your car on pit road for 1 minute, 60 seconds. So you're not, let's say like an oval, right? You lose a lap, but in 60 seconds, depending on that track, you might lose another lap if it's like Charlotte or something. You know what I mean? Let's just say that. Or a short track or whatever. Especially at a short track, you got to watch out because everything is close quarters. So when you're wrecking people at a short track, it could be more wild and more dangerous because nobody in their right mind is going to wreck anybody at Daytona or Talladega. Yeah. But at a short track, you can lose two laps if the guys are going around 60 seconds under caution or whatever. So, or go down pit road, you lose two laps immediately. Let's set something in place where if a guy does something that blatant and that obvious, like Jeff Burton noted on the broadcast, this is another problem I had. You know, I'm just saying, I'm not talking about Noah too much because everything that's been said, exactly what you said, is pretty much what I believe too. There's got to be some more maturity in Noah to make decisions. And he was saying post-race that he's sick of getting run over. Well, if you're sick of getting run over, get a little faster, right? I mean, Sage was pushing the issue because he wanted to pass him. Yeah, Sage probably could have been a little bit smarter. Maybe Sage is sitting here and saying, you know, Sage is a former IndyCar driver. He still runs Indy 500s. He's like, wow, I got fenders now. I can push the issue a little bit, you know, or this guy's going to rough me up. I can rough him back a little bit, which is true. You can. He probably feels that freedom, but you also got to know who you're racing. Maybe Noah's a little more temperament than the other guys. He's going to, you know, push the issue back if you're going to give it to him. So to go from there, it's like Jeff Burton in the booth. He said, I'm not sure if Noah had a mechanical issue. My guy, we know he didn't have a mechanical issue. It was blatant as day. That's like Matt Kenseth saying the tire was going down, hitting Joey Logano. Yeah.
He tried to give him the benefit of the doubt at first, which was surprising. Definitely. And then once we realized it was a dead right, then because Jeff Burton was the guy that tore into him after that. Then post race show, I don't know how much if you watched the post race show, like after Noah's interview when they went back to the booth. I don't know if you heard what Jeff said, but he was like, because Noah in his interview said, I'm racing for a championship. You know, I can't put up with stuff like this. Right. And then Jeff Burton was like, all right, if you're racing for a championship, then act like one. Act like you are. Like he went in the booth. I was like, damn, Jeff. And Jeff's been there, you know, just been, especially this NBC booth. I mean, they've seen it all unfold. These guys pay attention to the Xfinity series, especially Jeff Burton when he had Harrison Burton in there, who had his own scuffle with Noah Gregson at Kentucky. Exactly. Like Jeff Burton knows the history of what, you know, Noah Gregson's been through. And so does like Dale Jr., obviously his team owner, but wasn't in the booth that week, and Steve Letard as well. But definitely just setting a precedent, like we said, and what we both can agree on. And another point that I think was made by somebody throughout the weekend, but sixth place means much more to the 45 team than it does to the 9 team, right? Yeah. Like the 9 team is sitting in sixth, losing a position, right? Getting past, saying like, damn, like we like, this isn't good. We need to, you know, tune this car up better. I want to be up closer to the front. Towards the 45 is like, holy cow, shocked to be in the top 10, but I'm fighting for a top 5 right now. This is crazy. I'm going for it. You know, it means a lot more to them than it does the 9 car. And that's, you know, what maybe brings out a little bit more aggression in Sage Karam. But Sage Karam's like an experienced driver. I mean, he's not out there doing something stupid. I mean, he's a guy that's obviously he's an Indy Lights champion, right?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think
that's what
is.
They said. I think they were talking about him.
I think he is. Yeah. He's won a couple of junior championships here in America.
And Nitro Rallycross champion, which is very prestigious. Obviously, you know, we watched that happen because we were there.
Yes.
Yeah. Rallycross champion. I mean, he's done it all. He's a great racer. Obviously, he's raced in the Indy 500 countless times, made IndyCar starts. And if he's the Indy Lights champion, then that's, you know, a great accomplishment as well. Two very talented drivers going against each other, two very different drivers going against each other there
with different goals, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. With different goals on that day. I mean, like you said, for Alpha Prime, a top 12 is even good, in my opinion. That's what they would want, ideally, right? Like a top 12 would be satisfiable. And then a top 10 would be fantastic, and a top 5 would feel like a win, right?
Exactly.
You know, Noah's just got to be smarter of who he's racing there. If you're running for a championship, then why wreck someone and have the potential to be out yourself, right? I mean, if he destroyed his car even more, got hit by someone else, I think he continued racing, right?
He ended up getting like a top 10, so.
There you go. Yeah, sorry. I just completely bogged that down. I just remember who won the race. But anyways, yeah, so like, you know, if you're running for a championship, like Jeff Burns said, act like you are. I don't really like that statement too much, only because like Kyle Busch never acts like he's running for a championship, or never acts like he's a true champion or a true professional. And sometimes in his job, you know, like he gets a little ranty, he gets a little baby cryish, whatever, you know, someone wants to say. Noah is fine with being upset. He can scream on the radio all he wants. Ty Gibbs is upset too. You know, you've seen him change a little bit these last couple of weeks. He's noticed that he's had to mature pretty quickly a little bit. You know, you're going to win a lot of races. There's going to be a lot of eyes on you. Noah's the exact same way. He's won a couple of races this year, and he's going to have a lot of eyes on him. So he's won multiple races this year, right? Just to check in. Two. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's been a pretty good season for Noah. Those JRM cars are super fast too. So, you know, I don't really know about the whole act like one kind of thing. I'm just saying, if you're going to, they always say in racing, if you're going to retaliate against someone, at least keep your car clean. Guess what? He risked not keeping his car clean, especially with that move. He could have easily broke something on the car. That's a hard hit. He really did a dead right, like you said, and hooked him. So, and it's not like he hooked him in the quarter panel just to spin him out. He kind of hit him like in the middle-ish of the car, like the middle, like around the C post. So, yeah, I mean, exactly. So he spun himself out. He could have risked, you know, losing a good solid, you know, top 10 today. I mean, a top 10 on Saturday. So, yeah, it's just act like one. Yeah, that's okay. But for me, it's just like, don't risk the opportunity. Yeah. I mean, don't risk the opportunity of a good top 10, even if you're not even that fast today in the Xfinity series. Let's be honest, you know, you're the 9 car. You're going to most likely finish top 10 every week, even if you're a little off, because there's only like 13 cars every week that are capable of winning. So, or at least fast top premium cars. So yeah, to move on from that, I mean, like I said, just to recap it real quick, Noah, you know, there's got to be some looking in the mirror. You know, he's got to look in the mirror a little bit, fix himself a little bit, probably. This is another incident. And it was bad, right? Like, it's not just like you're roughing up the guy for the win, Dale Earnhardt Sr. style. You're wrecking this guy for, what, 9th or 10th? And the race is not even close to being done. And you're getting beat by the 45. Not saying the 45 is a bad car or anything like that. Sage is a very good driver on the road courses. But, you know, take what you can get. And just a little frustrating from my side of things, also for NASCAR too. You know, like, let's put a penalty system in this kind of thing. We can't be doing that with no regards. Why do you think the truck guys are doing what they do? You know, because they learn from the cop guys, and they know NASCAR is NASCAR. They're not going to do anything. So that's frustrating. So yeah, just love to have a little penalty system there.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I'm a guy who, when we got beef in NASCAR, like mostly in the Cup Series, like, you know, I sit back and I'm kind of an instigator, to be honest, in my head. I'm like, oh, for sure, dude, we got some beef out here. Let's go. We need some tension. So hell bad. Yeah. Oh, 100%. I wanted somebody to go beat somebody's ass. Let's be honest. You know, I mean, I was hoping it was Sage Karam to go beat Noah Gregson's ass, but Sage is a very stand-up guy and obviously gave a great interview and just, you know, didn't really know what he was doing, blah, blah, blah. But like, I like when drivers have beef, maybe, you know, when it's settled on the racetrack, one-on-one, just themselves. Like, if you tear up a race car going to wreck somebody, like, that happens, sure. Like, if it's just one-on-one, mostly you want it to be settled off the racetrack in NASCAR. But when that happens the way it did, and Noah Gregson lets his anger, you know, turns it first of all, you know, hooks a dead right on Sage Karam. That's one thing on a straightaway, but you taking out all those cars. I mean, it was a junkyard there, and it sucks because he took out the teams that he took out. I think were pretty much like almost every one of them were like single car organizations, like, or yes. two car, or just not as funded as like
31, 68, all independent.
68. Teams. I think our motorsports cars were involved in that, you know, like you noted Brandon Brown, 48 car as well was involved in that.
31 Mike Snyder.
Yeah. 31. And there were a lot of other cars that had damage. Even the other Alpha Josh Balicki got caught up in that one. The other Alpha Prime car, nobody had anywhere to go. And it sucks because a lot of those teams, I mean, that's a big hit for teams like that. And when they sit back and they realize who started that, right? Because when they all get out of the car, they have no idea who started it. They have no idea what happened. They're just like, well, shoot, we got caught up in a wreck. But I'm sure when they look back, and even Brandon Brown made a tweet about it, when they look back and look at the replay and see how that happened and see who caused it, that doesn't make them very happy, right? And they want their bills to be paid for, right? Because that's a whole car you got to fix up. And right, like cars like the 68, that car ain't coming back. Like the 48 got destroyed. That car ain't coming back either. Landon Castle also torn up. You know, it sucks to see everybody else get collected in your mess. And that's kind of what at Gateway, when Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain were having their feud, Chase Elliott, when BJ McLeod got all pissed on the radio because they almost wiped him out. Like that's what you fear when you have these types of situations, is taking out innocent bystanders in the process. Like, even like, you know, when you date back to the famous Phoenix crash with Jeff Gordon, Clint Boyer, when that happened. And then I think in the process, like Joey Logano got collected in that, Eric Almirola, one other car maybe was involved in that. Those are the type of situations you hate, you want to avoid when you take out innocent bystanders. Now, when you see an incident like at Martinsville, when Matt Kenseth totally wiped out Joey Logano, it still sucks, but it is a little funny. It's a little more better to enjoy because they only, you know,
retaliation kind of thing.
Yeah. So. And one car was already wiped out. And so he just felt like he needed to pay back the other car. So we did. Still not like a great precedent again to set for the sport. And they did suspend him, right? Two races.
Yes. There's
two or three races towards the end of that season. So, And you've seen, I think I saw somebody comparing it to Carl Edwards taking out Brad Keselowski at Atlanta, where Keselowski flipped into the catch fence. There was no suspension for that, no penalty. I think just a talking to, like they did to Noah Gregson, which was odd, which I didn't even remember that totally, if there was a penalty or not for Carl Edwards, but I guess there wasn't for that incident. But like you said, setting a precedent, right? Definitely should have been a penalty because, like, not that every driver is going to look at that and be like, oh, well, I'm going to wipe out this guy now because I know, you know, that I can do that. Most drivers aren't, because, you know, the last thing we want to do is tear up our equipment unless they're getting mad in the race car. But you still do want to set a precedent, like, all right, because now in the future, if this happens again, people are going to be like, well, shoot, Noah didn't get penalized. Why should I? Or why should this car get penalized if Noah Gregson didn't get penalized for blatantly wiping out half the field, right, when – you know, he didn't have to, you know what I mean? So just like you said, setting a precedent, setting a standard for crashing, intentionally crashing. Cause obviously we know it was intentional. He admitted to it. He said, I wrecked him. Yeah. Sorry for everyone else, you know, caught up in the wreck, but I was tired of it and I wrecked him. It's exactly what he said. Right. So definitely setting a precedent. You know, we don't have Tommy Joe on the show right now, but we do have a little audio clip here. I'm going to add in an interview from Destin Albino from the track, and he wasn't very happy.
I mean, obviously it sets us back. I mean, that's a, you know, pretty costly wreck, but I mean, mainly it's a bummer because of the day we were having. I don't think Sage was really out of the top 12 all day. So that for us was a really big deal. I'm really proud of the team. Obviously one of the best qualifying efforts we've ever had. And I don't think Sage is really doing anything intentional, right? I think they were racing and they were racing hard. I think that's a situation where what was a great day for us was a frustrating day for Noah, right? Where clearly they're struggling. They're back there in 10th or 11th, and that's, you know, he wants to be running better than that. And I know he's probably frustrated. And Sage is racing hard because for us, a top team is like a big deal. So I think that was just him taking out some frustration on feeling like he was being raced hard for a position he didn't care about, but we care about it a lot.
You had some choice words over Twitter, you know, directing Dale and Kelly and telling them, you know, your opinion. What do you hope comes of this? Like,
nothing's going to come from it. Nothing's ever come from it. I mean, obviously we're on the wrong end of it. But I mean, I'm not backing away from anything I said. I mean, I'd be embarrassed to be associated with a guy. I mean, he's done this how many times? How many times is he going to like publicly apologize? And now he's trying to act like he's like a bad dude, like a tough guy. It's like, are you kidding me? That's the softest thing I've ever seen. Like, I'll tell you what's tough is like coming out here and trying to race with a budget that's like less than a quarter of what they're doing. So I mean that's tough. I mean, seeing, you know, doing this with a 5-man race team, that's tough. You know, doing that's soft. I mean, you get out run by a guy for a corner and you feel like he races you dirty and you just hook him down straight away. And I think Sage handled it probably much better than I could have, which is why I'm just so proud to have a guy like that on my team. And obviously I think they ought to be pretty embarrassed by the guy on there.
All right, and that was Tommy Joe, who will not be racing this weekend again for Alpha Prime. He did race the Atlanta race last year, but he's not going to run it this year. It'll be actually Sage Karam back in the saddle in the 45. I think he's in the 44. Cesar Bracarella is in the 45 this week. So Sage Karam is back. Don't think we'll get any on-track interactions between himself and Gregson, but you never know. But Atlanta Super Speedway this weekend, we'll wrap up the show with talking about this. Obviously, the new track configuration made its debut back in March, I believe, the beginning of the season. And it had Cup Series, Truck Series, Xfinity Series there all that weekend. This time it's just Cup and Xfinity as the trucks are in Mid-Ohio. I was like most things I try to be optimistic about. I was pretty optimistic about the Atlanta races before. I didn't think they were horrible. Like, I didn't think they were awful. Like it had already set in that our old Atlanta was gone and we're not going to get that back. We'll see how the track, you know, takes place the next 10 years, right? Maybe it could change. Maybe it could be like a fast mile and a half, slip and slide, mile out. You never know. Don't think so, but that's the only hope there is there. But it had kind of already set in, right? Our old Atlanta's gone. Let's just try to be as hopeful as we can for this new Atlanta that we could put on a show. And it wasn't like your, I thought the cool dynamic of it was, it wasn't your average super speedway race. It wasn't Daytona. No, it was Talladega. Yes. It's a lot shorter track. And you saw like slingshot moves going in the corners to make passes. I thought those were really cool to watch.
It was a great race.
It was pretty solid. Cup race was pretty solid. Xfinity race was pretty solid as well. And I thought they were good races. Me personally wish the races this weekend were at night. Think it makes more sense. These are going to be hot races. I mean, just like Nashville, these are going to be some hot races. And I was looking at the weather forecast the other day. Didn't look very good as far as like weather. I think they'll be okay. I hope. You never know if it'll clear up. You never know down here in the South, as you know, in Florida, Georgia area, you never know with weather. But I thought the races the first time were fine. I thought they were good races, very different races. Obviously, the Cup Series, the tire issues, we hope we don't have those again this time. That's what kind of made the racing a little weird. It's because we had a lot of tire issues that caused a few big wrecks. You had an exciting finish for the Cup Series, exciting finish for the Xfinity Series. Two exciting finishes, two solid races as well. And I think we'll have some good racing this weekend. How'd you take in the races from March? I mean, I know we probably talked about it before. I don't remember it too much, even though it does feel like it just happened. Like, I feel like the Atlanta weekend just happened. And it's weird that these races are like so close. I think this is the first recurring race we have on the schedule, because you're talking about like a 4-month separation between the two Atlanta races. Wish it was at night, but it'll be during the day. Probably be pretty hot unless we get some cloud cover. But overall, I think we'll have some two good races, I'm expecting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is the first race that we're going back, first venue we're going back to this year. I didn't think about it like that, but yeah, no, I mean, I don't really particularly remember too much about the Atlanta races. I mean, I remember the slingshots, like you said, for sure. I mean, there's a lot that maybe wasn't too memorable about it. I remember the crashing finish with Chris Buescher and a couple of those guys in there. The 17 car was going around backwards across the checkered flag. He reminded us about that in his interview last week, this past weekend, when he finished sixth at Road America. But that made me really not, obviously crashes don't really excite me too much, but the slingshots, like you said, you saw kind of like a 90s style super speedway racing where cars weren't necessarily so tight in packs. Like, there was 3x3x3, but they were still loose. You know, the cars were kind of maintaining their own speed a little bit. It's not like you had to push and shove with the whole pack kind of thing. It kind of gave you, like I said, that little old school feel. And I do agree that we'll probably see great races again. I think maybe even better, right? Because we're going back. Yeah. You would think that, you know, with a car having, you know, already a notebook from the first race, you know, things do, obviously as teams learn, you lose a little bit of the competitiveness because one team gets better. One team, you know, doesn't find what the other team has. But then again, this being a draft dependent race, you know, all about the air and stuff like that. I think a lot of the manufacturers are working together. So, you know, this could be a great opportunity for Toyota to come back. They've been off the last couple of weeks, specifically at the road courses. So I think, didn't Bell get the pole earlier this year? I think so.
At Atlanta, I think so. Yeah. He had a pretty fast car too. He was up there right at the end.
Yeah. Hamlin and Truex all started in the top five, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Bell got penalized for the yellow line rule. I think they said he passed below on the backstretch.
That's right. Yes. Yes. And he finished last on the lead lap. Or was that Chastain? He tried to pass Chastain.
Yeah, he tried to pass Chastain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we could see I say we bet money on it. Jeff Gluck's good race poll will be quite high, especially if, the Dawsonville kid wins or something like that. Chase gets the checkered flag. But yeah, I mean, it also, this is a great race. Michael McDowell could put another good points finish in. Bubba Wallace can get up there. You know, Austin Dillon could potentially be up there. I think Austin was running pretty good in the race earlier this year. Like, he was up there at some point. So Eric Jones could be another player. I think Jones ran pretty well in March, I want to say. I don't know where he finished, but I remember him being up there. So I think there's a lot of new players that can come into this week and perform pretty well and maybe lock themselves in the playoffs. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I'm very excited, especially for Trucks at Mid-Ohio as well. If you don't mind, I mentioned that I'm covering Trucks this weekend for TobyChrissy.com. So that'll be a good time. I think this would be my first weekend, hopefully of many. So really pumped to get that.
Well, we got Mid-Ohio unlocked because I got ARCA. So me and you are basically doing Mid-Ohio.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Simple kind of 1-2 day show. I'm looking at the schedule here now. ARCA race.
Yeah.
Is at on Friday. Trucks gets most of their stuff done on Friday, then has a quick race on Saturday at 1:30 on FS1. So yeah, really pumped for that. ARCA races on FS1 as well, so that's cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so it should be it's a good weekend of racing, right? I mean, I don't feel like Trucks is all by themselves at Mid-Ohio, right? Hopefully, you know, Fox puts some good TV coverage into it. Ohio 2 weeks in a row because we just had IndyCar there, so yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. Really excited for the weekend for sure. Ready to embark on to get into this weekend for sure.
Yeah, and one thing that I wanted to note too is like Atlanta feels different. I'm kind of excited going to this weekend because like it's been since May 29th, the Coke 600, since we've had like a mile and a half racetrack, like a higher speed racetrack. I mean, we've been to Gateway, Sonoma, and then we took a week off, went to Nashville, went to road course at Road America. So it's kind of fresh, I think, heading to a higher speed track. You know, the Xfinity car is going to be real fast going around there. You know, the Cup Series cars are going to be fast, and it looks real fast too, because it's a smaller racetrack. And so it looks like those cars are flying. So I think adding that dynamic in is going to be cool. Like you mentioned, Trucks and ARCA at Mid-Ohio is also cool as well. Thank you to everybody making the ARCA schedule for making the ARCA race on Friday. That is nice. I can enjoy Xfinity on Saturday. Thank you very much. So appreciate that. But as far as the weekend, only qualifying for Cup and Xfinity. They decided to scrap practice because we had it before. They're going to send them out one lap qualifying runs just like before. And no practice. And that's what we're going to get. So we'll just send them out to the racetrack and see what happens. As far as we can kind of just start heading in the guys we want to watch for this weekend, race picks. Me personally, I'm going to look at guys below the bubble in the Cup Series first off that maybe can make a jump here, guys that are looking to make something happen. Like you mentioned, Eric Jones was a guy who was fast last time we went to this track. Austin Dillon, this seems like a place Austin Dillon could make something happen, right? Fresh off an RCR win. But you know what really could happen this weekend is a Justin Haley victory. This just seems like Justin Haley win. Yeah. Like this or Daytona. It's either going to happen here or Daytona. And you know a Justin Haley victory just comes out of nowhere. And this is where it could happen. And I mean, Ricky Stenhouse, there's so many players in this Cup Series.
Yeah.
Like, RSJ, here, as I look below the cup, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Bubba Wallace, always strong on these types of racetracks. And somebody that's probably looking at this weekend as somewhere that they need is Brad Keselowski, who's been in a must-win situation since like literally the beginning of the season. Like he's been in a must-win, needs this race to go right for him. Had a better weekend at Road America. Like even though they had an issue towards the end, they had speed. Like the RFK cars in general have been having speed, which has been nice to see. So Brad K probably hoping this weekend goes a lot better. Those are the guys that I'm watching. Is there anybody in particular looking at the Cup side?
Yeah, I like Brad K. I didn't even think about Brad Keselowski. I mean, those RFK cars have weird speed, right? Like they show up to a road course and they're fast. So, I think, you know, I think Austin Dillon is a really good one to keep in mind. I think Michael McDowell could be up there. You know, like I mentioned before, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is one that I always like to pick at a road at a super speedway race. I think he could be really quick here too. I kind of like the option of Harrison Burton too. I feel like he's been riding a little bit of momentum. He's been running up, he's been running more consistently up front, maybe finishing mid pack up front, which I mean like 15th, which is pretty good from where he was coming from. I think at Daytona, he performed well. The Fords I think are going to probably be really fast this weekend. I think they've been safe. They've been saving some stuff for Atlanta and I think they're looking pretty good. So so you picked Justin Haley, right?
Oh, I was just saying for some, I mean, I could, if I'm going to make like my race pick,
sure.
I'll go with Ryan Blaney.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's really good. Yeah. That's a really good one. You know what? I usually like to like, just go crazy on these picks sometimes, but I won't this time around. I mean, Ryan Blaney's good. I probably would have chosen that. I'm going to go for, I'm going to go for Chris Buescher.
Yeah. I like,
yeah. He's been really riding the momentum. And I think the 17 car is going to be fast this weekend. And I think he has a lot of fast forwards up there to help him out. So if he can just be up there at the end, like the drivers always say, and just finish it off. And I think if he's up there at the end, he can be a good pick.
Yeah, exactly. So now on the Xfinity side, you have a bunch of guys where it's must-win situation if you're below the cut. The closest guy
pretty
to the
playoff
cut line is Anthony Alfredo, and he's 72 points back of Landon Castle. So you got guys below the cut that are definitely capable of winning a race like Atlanta or Daytona, like guys that, you know, we talked about this Xfinity Series season. You know, you have guys below the cut that could win a race that aren't like racing for super underfunded teams that don't have to like stay in the back as far as these races are looking for good finishes. Like these are teams that want to go out there and win. Get Anthony Alfredo, Brett Moffitt, Brandon Brown. I mean, Brandon Brown did it last year. Jeb Burton, Sheldon Creed. Sheldon Creed for sure is the big name that you look has had horrible luck this year below all three Al Motorsports cars in the point standings, even to Myatt Snyder. And then the other two cars in the standings being Alex LeBay and Jeremy Clemens in the top 20 that would be eligible for the playoffs if they were to win. So as far as like a race pick for Xfinity, I think it's going to be a great race. I think it'll be a very dynamic race. Interesting to see how it goes. But I think somebody that's looking for victory lane, I'm going to just go with a new winner to stay with the trend. I think this is a race like a guy like Daniel Hemric has to win to get a victory. His first win of the season. Honestly, I expected more from that team this year. I really did, being the defending champions. I thought that championship win would have gave him a lot more confidence. Maybe it's just meshing with colleague. I think it is definitely a big switch going from Jogo's racing to colleagues. Maybe got to get used to things. Even though he was with the Chevy camp for a while before, you would have thought it was just kind of like going back home, but maybe still trying to get things figured out. But I think this is a race that definitely Daniel Hemric could end up in victory lane with.
Yeah, I'm going to keep in the Chevy camp on that one too, I think. I do like the choice of a new winner. I'm going to go first-time winner Sheldon Creed.
Ooh, that's something I know that one's
out there, but it's something that needs to happen. Austin Hill finished third in the Xfinity race there earlier this year. I remember that. And he won Daytona. So those cars are fast there, and I think Sheldon's going to put all the crap that's happened to him the last couple of weeks behind him and get a win here.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see that. I mean, Sheldon Creed, that's a team that has like top five speed sometimes, some of these weeks, just can't finish the job. And it really sucks because this is a season that you really thought you know, would have been like a breakout year for Sheldon Creed coming up from trucks and rookie year, but maybe just a lot of things to work out and just races in general. I mean, they've had the speed, just hasn't worked out. A lot of crashes this year, some mechanical failures here and there as well. Same thing happened to Road America. So they're definitely looking for something to get out of this terrible season that it's been. So we'll go from there. We'll finish off with the truck series here. I mean, we're going to Mid Ohio just a few races before the playoffs. A road course that the truck series hasn't been to, I believe, ever. So it's going to be a very interesting race to watch. You got a lot of truck drivers that'll be running the ARC race to get some extra laps. But as far as my race pick, I think this is a race. I think he'll finally break through. I think Carson Hocevar wins this race, gets the job done finally. Was very fast at Sonoma, surprisingly, even, you know, with his given injuries, and then had to, you know, obviously crash in qualifying, had to start from the rear, gave the car up to Dino Suarez. But I think this is the race. I think Carson Hocevar pulls through at Mid-Ohio. That'll be my race pick.
Okay, good. Yeah, I thought you were going to take mine for a second. I'm going to go ahead and say that these two guys are going to be racing at the end of the race, Carson and John Hunter Nemechek, and I'll go for the number four truck. I say JHN gets the win. He's doing Venturini this weekend, yep, with running the ARC race with Venturini Motorsports. So I think that number four Toyota is going to be really quick. I say Nemechek gets the win. I think Nemechek and Hocevar are going to be dueling it out at the end, truly.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that'll be a great finish.
Could be. Yeah, I think it'll be a good race. I'm optimistic for it. Mid-Ohio's good track. IndyCar race wasn't that bad either. Obviously had a lot of drama, but IndyCar race is pretty solid. But yeah, it's going to be a great weekend of racing. We got Super Speedway racing, two races on a Super Speedway, and then we got Truck Series and ARCA, two races on a road course. So a very dynamic weekend, if that's what you're looking forward to. So try to look at exact timing here. I know the truck race is probably before the Xfinity race. Yeah, truck race, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 on Saturday. And then the Xfinity race is 5:00 Eastern on USA on Saturday, which like could be another day to night transition race. Maybe starts at 5:00 local time. So could be interesting to see if that race, cause that race went into the night earlier this year as well. And then you have the cup race, 3:00 on USA on Sunday. I think rain is going to be a factor looking at the forecasts. It's supposed to cool down this weekend because of the rain. Other than that, the whole week, it's looking like it's like lower 90s right now in Atlanta, but it says it's supposed to clear off because of the rain, I guess. So hopefully the rain stays away, but hopefully we do get some cooler temperatures. Either way, hopefully we get some racing in this weekend. Hope the rain's all good, but Atlanta, Mid-Ohio, going to be a fun weekend, Matt.
Yeah. It wouldn't be NASCAR if there was no rain. So
exactly.
You know, so yeah, no, it's going to be a great weekend. Thank you for having me on again. It's great to kick off kind of the second half of the year here on the podcast, and thank you to everybody listening, and thank you for having me again.
Exactly. Going into this second half of the year, well in gear, getting ready for the playoffs. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Thanks to the Bleav Podcast Network, Bet Online, TobyChris.com, on the media, everybody who helps out with the Drivers Meeting Podcast. We're back. Thanks to David Ruderman for being a great guest on the show. We'll be back next week. I never say the same. Not again, I don't know why.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money.